Welcome back, everyone. We're live. Once again, we're like 5 minutes late, but, you know, whatever. Get used to it.
That's yeah, us. I mean, if you're not used to that by now, you don't know this podcast very well.
We are trying out some new software, though, right?
It's late, yes.
Whatever. Get used to it. So,
because we don't happen to be in the same place. And let me see if this helps a little bit. Let me see if I can. I'll just put this here and see if I can you hear me better?
I can hear you just fine.
Okay, cool. Awesome.
Oddly, there's like a small fly flying around in my studio space, and it's really just annoying the crap out of me.
Well,
so, sorry about that. Okay, so anyway, briefly, I just kind of want to let everybody know, sorry about last month's podcast. We had some serious technical issues, largely to do with Facebook being down. I put up a really strongly worded rant video about it. But we have seemed to have gotten the technological issues sorted out. We've got some new software, something that will support me being not in DC.
Yeah.
Although I missed the background. I missed the space background.
I do too. We're going to have to get, it's kind of like we went up in tech and now we're going to have to take a little dip and then we'll come back.
It's funny because I like this new software a bit better.
Yeah. I mean, I like the fact that we don't have to actually be in the same place. I mean, even when you lived near here, we weren't exactly in the same place. We had to, you know, there was a commute involved.
Right.
That was always kind of a pain. So we'll see how this works.
This is episode 15?
Oh, I think so. I think we're up to 15. If we say this wrong, of course, when we do the permanent videos on YouTube, we'll switch it and I'll put a little correction at the bottom. But I think it is 15 because we did 14. We did 13 and 14 last time. And I believe that this is actually 15. We're moving along quite rapidly now.
Yep, we are. So we're back after our brief hiatus. I'm calling that our late summer hiatus.
Yeah, that we can do it every year now. We just well, good God, every year that like makes me feel tired already. Well, but yeah, it is. Yeah, we can pretend like we went on a sweet vacation or something, and you know, nobody knows.
I went on a science fiction sabbatical where I scaled the peak of I scaled Adam's Peak and offered a burning sage stick to Arthur C. Clarke.
Oh my God! Well, did he respond?
There would be photos all over Instagram if that happened. So welcome back, everyone. We are just as a brief recap. We are live streaming 4 episodes back to back. We have now cut the format down to 1.5-hour episodes, but they'll be aired and distributed once a week. But we're live streaming. If you want to see all 4 episodes, you can see them today, Sunday. And yeah. And I do want to, before we also get started, I we didn't talk about this earlier, but I wanted to inject this. I need to find this. I am getting some positive feedback from our viewers. It's very touching. So I wanted to read real quick. So Sarah S. says, thank you all for the podcast. I happened upon this last week when I was searching iTunes for a science fiction podcast, and you guys are really putting putting science fiction back into science fiction, which I'm really grateful for. Keep up the good work.
Well, that's nice, because that's exactly that's the reason we did this, the reason we started doing this.
Yes, and Bizzle? Sorry, it's. I'm trying to took off my glasses. So yeah, Bizzle says, yeah, this is deep. You guys have a really good nuanced discussion about science fiction topics, which is lacking sadly today in science fiction topics.
There's a lot. there's a lot of fanboy and fangirl stuff out there now, and it's they don't really analyze very much. What they just talk about how cool things are,
right?
Sort of butthead level, and it's like you know if it's literature, you need to be able to talk about things. You need to be able to talk about things like, you know, plot structure and character development and acting and
conceptually talk about the feasibility of things conceptually.
Exactly. And whether or not something actually qualifies as science fiction or whether it's, you know, more science fantasy or whatever.
And Thea Lim, who mentioned us, I'm going to go back to that. She said we had a very charming podcast. So I don't know about you, but I feel charming.
She had a very charming book.
It was a very charming book.
Yes.
So, I was off on it, but I still liked it. Still liked her writing. So I want to get those out of the way. And also, I wanted to offer rest in peace. You know, there's two people who I feel like need to be honored today. Oh. Not just one. Gary Kurtz, who was the producer of the original Star Wars movies. He passed away this past week. Yes. I believe
he was 79. He did American Graffiti, too, which was Mark Hamill's first, his like intro to film, right? I mean, that was his big
Harrison Ford.
No, it was Mark Hamill's for American Graffiti.
Yeah, I don't remember Mark Hamill. I remember Harrison Ford.
He popped out of the top of the thing and was singing "Love Is a Many Splendored Thing." Yeah, right. That thing. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah. That was so yeah, Gary Kurtz, who really was a huge in starting off that transformation in sci-fi cinema in the middle of the 70s. Crazy influence.
Yes. Crazy. And also, you know, they butted heads. George Lucas and Gary Kurtz, and Kurtz was eventually fired.
Wow, I did not know that. Despite what did they butt heads about?
Well, they had some creative differences about the original, and his influence on the original movie was, you know, I mean, I don't know specifically, but I know that his contribution to the original made the movies, you know, successful to some degree. Mm-hmm. So even though he was fired, and I think he was fired after Empire or before Empire, I can't remember. So
considering what the prequels look like, which were all Lucas, I can believe that.
<That's, Yeah. laughs> Okay. So the other condolence, obituary, rest in peace, I have is for Al Matthews. I have a picture of him right here. Sergeant Apone.
Oh, what?
From Aliens. He died. He died in Spain.
Oh, that sucks.
And I loved him. I loved that character. He was like super believable, you know? So rest in peace. You will be missed. We loved you. We loved your performances. Fare thee well.
Onward and upward.
Yes.
To infinity and beyond.
So what do we got this week?
Oh, well, we have a lot of stuff this week because we have a lot of stuff over the past 2 months, and I think that we're starting out. I think we agreed to start out by reviewing a book, The Thousand Year Beach.
Yes.
Yeah, by Toby Hirotaka.
Oh, that's right. We are having two book reviews, correct?
We do have two book reviews, one in this episode and then one in a future episode. And I just have to say, though, because we're going to say some other things about this book. I really like this cover. I remember when I first saw it, you had bought it quite a while ago. And I believe the last time we did a podcast, I'd seen it at your place at the studio there. And I thought that looks interesting. And then we decided to review it. And you want to get into the review? Are we going to do the criteria?
Yeah, I do want to get into the review. I didn't actually buy this book, so let me sort of backtrack back that a little bit.
Oh, okay. There's a story here.
Short story. I actually won the book.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So Viz Media, you know, they're the ones that produced they were the ones that published Sisyphean.
Oh, wow. That's a fantastic, which we reviewed very well.
Very well, yes. And I was so happy with it, and also the whole happy of discovering this honey hole of you know, Japanese science fiction. I went back and dip into the well, and I ordered like two or three books. But this one I won because they do a giveaway over at Haikasoru's Facebook page. They do a giveaway whenever they have new books. So if you have an opportunity, or anybody who's interested, check their Facebook page, join it, like it, follow it, because from time to time they give away free books. And I was one of the ones that won a copy. I started reading it and was like, hey, let's review this. And that started us down this dark path.
Yes, it started. Yes, exactly. And I was kind of hoping this would be more like Sisyphean, which was the first piece of Japanese sci-fi that I had ever read. As it turned out, it was not at all. Well, no, in some ways it was, but not in quality. That was my main problem. And I have to confess that earlier this week, John and I, we communicate on and off all the time about what we're going to talk about in the podcast. And I had told him about my thoughts about this book somewhat earlier. And then earlier this week, I just told him, I was like, I can't finish this book. And that's kind of not only my apology to him, but my apology. I'm still going to review it. That's how arrogant I am. But I just could not finish. I couldn't finish the book. It was painful to read.
Tell us why.
Well, you're going to put me on the spot.
Well, I mean, I'm going to be right there with you. I'm going to back you up.
Okay. But I found the concept very compelling. Let me go into the concept as far as I got into it, which is that the book is set in a virtual reality setting where apparently real humans used to 1,000 years in the VR world used to come visit. And all of the AIs that are like the NPCs in this virtual reality world remember when humans used to come, but then they stopped mysteriously for some reason. And the AIs have just sort of gone about their lives for all this period, not really understanding why that happened. And then at the beginning of the book, everything starts to fall apart and these giant spiders fall out of the sky and start deleting things and tearing things apart. A fantastic concept, just an amazing concept. But what I found, the writing was so poor, the character development was so poor, but mostly the writing. And there was a lot of really klutzy exposition and, the old writing maxim of show, don't tell. And they would just stop every once in a while whenever a detail needed to be inserted. The author would stop every once in a while when a detail needed to be inserted and would just spend a paragraph explaining something and then just jump back into the action. And it was just really, I really hate to use this word because it's a really negative word, but it was really amateurish in the way that the writing was done.
Interesting. And,
yeah. So I found it hard to read simply because it was just painful.
Now before we finish straight trashing this book, let's remind the audience briefly about the criteria.
Okay.
So we have concept.
Prose.
Plot or structure.
Yes.
Okay.
Those are
the ones we usually use. Yes. So tell us. Now, tell us what you gave. What did you give the concept?
Concept, I would give it a 5. The concept's amazing. It's a concept that if I had known what this book was about, which I didn't, I just sort of cold went into it. But if I had known what this book was, or if someone had told me, hey, I have this book that's about people who are the characters, the artificial intelligence characters in a virtual reality world that has been abandoned, and suddenly this force invades their universe and starts tearing it apart, I would have said, that's a fantastic, that sounds like an amazing novel.
Yes.
So concept, it's weird because I couldn't even finish this book, but the concept I think is top notch, absolutely top notch. And I can see why it would get greenlit. If someone said, I've got this book I'm writing about this, I would have done it. I would have said, yeah, absolutely. Send me that book because it sounds like a fantastic concept.
Sure.
What about now? What do you think?
Now, okay, well, it's really interesting because I thought the writing started off competent. What I found with the writing was that the writer he struggled maintaining that level of consistency, obviously, which is what novel writing is. It's a marathon, not a sprint. So, yes. And one of the things I really loved about it initially was that, number one, there was an element of darkness and desolation, number one, that I felt like you don't typically see in these kinds of books. First of all, this idea of a machine apocalypse told from the perspective of the machines. And their apocalypse, to me, wasn't spiders coming out of the sky and devouring people, because that's a highly subjective idea. They respond negatively to it because they're programmed to. Right. What they're also programmed to respond to is human interaction. So they're already in their apocalypse because there are no people. There haven't been people at this place for 1,000 years.
Yeah, that's a fantastic point, because that's also part of, it's weird because there are two concepts going on here. Well, actually, there are three concepts. The concept of the virtual reality setting, where you're telling the story through the AIs, that's a fantastic concept.
Yes.
The concept of this virtual reality has been abandoned for, in the subjective view of the AIs, for 1,000 years. Fantastic concept. And then it starts to get dismantled by these mysterious spiders that drop out of the sky. Amazing. It's a trifecta of amazing concepts, I think.
Yes, absolutely. And the other interesting thing about it too is, if you look at dystopias that are told from the human perspective, all of them have this subtext of absence of purpose. If you look at P.D. James' Children of Men, if you look at Equilibrium, if you look at even Orwell, you know, the purpose is either something that's handed to them, force-fed to them, or the existence itself is devoid of purpose. And that's what dystopias ultimately are. And this is that. The simulations don't have purpose.
Right.
So
they're just going through routines. They're just going through these, they've been going through for 1,000 years.
Exactly. It's this farce, essentially, that they have to play out. And when you think about it, even though they don't really have like a similar concept of time, as a human reading it, you're going, oh my God, they have to do this pretty much forever until somebody pulls the plug out there. You know what I mean? What was that video game we saw? That it was like a video game world that you and I saw online, where it was just one guy running around because the world had been abandoned.
Yeah, it was an abandoned MMORPG.
Yeah.
It was an old multiplayer RPG that had just been abandoned, and all the glitches had kind of grown on their own over the years.
Right.
You dropped in years later, and there was all kinds of crazy stuff going on. Like the game had gone insane. It's basically what it seemed like. I wish I could remember what it was.
And then he runs into one other person. And that's what this reminded me of. I was like, man, this is like a game with no players.
Right.
So tell me, what did you gave the use on the concept, you gave it 5 stars then. You said it had been 5 stars.
Yeah.
Okay, so I would agree. Conceptually, it was fantastic.
Yes. But for prose, I'm going to have to say, I don't know. I'm going to have to say 2.5 stars because, like you said, it started out very strong, but then at the sort of mid scale, because I can't speak to the whole story arc, but at the mid scale, it really started to fall apart because it just seemed like a series of anecdotes. And the author kept introducing new characters. And before you could get to know them very well, they were very vivid characters. But before you could get to know them very well, like, they just started dying or getting attacked. It was just not a very well put together in a narrative sense. And so
I felt like he was like, I'm going to George R. R. Martin this, but without really understanding what George was doing. You know what I mean? Like, that guy died, but there was a reason why he died.
Right.
May not be immediately apparent, but awesome. And he was just like, you know what would be really cool? Is if I took the weirdest possible thing right now and made that happen to my character.
Right. And it was weird, but it didn't have any, there was no affect. I didn't feel anything, but I didn't care about these characters because I just started learning about them like two pages before.
Right.
I just felt like someone should have, there should have been some feedback at some point saying, how about you establish all these characters first, let them interact for a quarter of the book, and then drop in the plot changer. Because the plot changer happened almost immediately. It was so fast. It was like,
yes,
you weren't even really embedded in the world before everything started to fall apart. And that was another thing that I just thought was just bad.
The other interesting thing about that too was that he used the introduction of the characters as an excuse for the clumsy exposition, which then was what moved the story forward, rather than introducing the character, doing some foreshadowing and hinting at the character's purpose or origin, and then over time fleshing them out, and then, oh my God, that character died, you know, for whatever reason. It wasn't pertinent.
Right, and then you would care about whether the character died or not.
Yeah.
He skipped over a lot of that by just simply inserting a paragraph explaining things every once in a while. And it's like, that's not, it's very, you know, and I was saying this to you earlier as we were discussing this. It struck me very much like the way like a freshman creative writing class submission would sound.
Yes.
And you could read something like that and say, this person has a lot of innate talent, but someone needs to tell them all this stuff you packed in this paragraph needs to be, you need to break it out, put it into the story and push your plot point forward so that you can develop this stuff.
Yes.
I don't know why nobody did that. That's the thing that really gets me, is I don't understand why no one did this in the entire development of this novel. Not the agent, not the editors, not the publishers, that nobody said, whoa, 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 whoa. This could be a great story if you would just do these little things and make it, you know, and write it.
We spoke about this briefly before, and I'm going to sort of inject my theory. You just gave the prose 2.5 stars, or you gave the plot the structure?
2.5 stars. The prose 2.5 stars. Plot structure. I don't know if I can speak to the plot structure because I only got through. I mean, this is as far as I got through. I didn't get through very far. But I would have to give, from what I saw, I'd have to give the plot and structure. I mean, I'd also have to give it 2 stars. Two stars, 5 stars.
I would have to agree with you, and mostly because I felt like 2.5 for the prose was probably a bit generous. But the reason why I say that is because the plot, and if you wanted a Frankenstein principle, the plot doesn't stand up on its own without the sort of superfluous introduction of these characters and their deaths.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So the point of the story was the genesis of the characters and then ultimately their deaths, not the story itself.
Right. Yeah.
So anyway, going back to my theory about why, how this book made it to publication is, I think it has to do with the evolution of the market. And we spoke about this, which is, this book reminded me of a genre that's become very, very famous, particularly amongst Kindle Unlimited binge readers, is RPG Lit.
Yeah.
You know, which sort of Ernest Cline's book falls into, Ready Player One. We talked about that.
Right.
And what you're seeing right now with these independent authors who are basically just giving the finger to TradPub. Oops, didn't mean to do that. But just flicking off traditional publishers.
Goblin too. You said now we're even.
Yeah. They're going out on their own, and Kindle Unlimited is now this market force that's driving the proliferation of what I would consider to be substandard literature.
Of course, absolutely. I don't think that you consider. I think a lot of people consider it substandard literature.
Yes, I mean there. I've read some stuff where there were more typos on the first page than I've ever seen in any second draft book, and the people who can't even cobble 2 sentences together, and these are people who are still making, you know, because of the way that KU is structured, they're still making thousands of dollars every month.
It's not an ethical sales structure because it does not reward excellence. It rewards,
It rewards gamesmanship.
Right.
So what's happening now is that a lot of these people have figured out that a rapid release, because there are readers who are binge reading, a rapid release structure for their books is preferable because they can release one and get, say, $8,000 in sales for the first month, yeah. and then release a second one and right. get not only another $8,000, but a boost to the sale to the original book. And so what happens is as they keep releasing these serialized concepts, is their sales continue to increase. So I think I'm not saying it's what happened with Viz Media in this book. What I'm saying is traditional publishers realize that they're now being inundated by substandard literature, an unethical sales structure, and they're playing catch up.
Right. And they're skipping over a lot of the steps, because another thing this book reminded me of is very much, even though it was, you know, I didn't find any, I didn't find any ungrammatical. This is a translation, by the way, just for the viewers know. This is an English translation of a Japanese book. But I didn't find anything like because I work as an editor, and I didn't come through here seeing a lot of grammatical mistakes or anything like that. So that part was done, but the tweaking of the plot and the tweaking of the story itself wasn't done. They just rushed it forward because they're in this mindset where they have to keep up with this self-publishing pace.
Yes.
Just boom, 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 boom. And I just, there's a good book in here. That's the thing.
There is.
I'm hesitant to trash this book because there is a good story in here, but it has not been finished yet. It's just not finished.
Agreed. So you say 5 stars concept. So do I. You say 2.5 stars. Prose, I say two stars on plot structure. I say two also. Mm-hmm. I think we both agree that the theory that I put forth that you and I have been sort of hashing out has some merit. I think what's going to happen over time is that the market's going to correct itself as markets tend to.
Yeah, and as I was telling you, I think that what's going to happen is that a couple of really fantastic books are going to come out in this particular genre, the RPG lit. Game lit, and you were mentioning a third one. I can't remember. It was a
harem lit.
Yeah, that once somebody manages to write a really well done novel in all of these genres, that will become the standard. And the other stuff that's just sort of hack work that's just thrown out there to scoop money up will look so ridiculous by comparison that it won't be as successful as it is now.
Agreed. I agree with that. So,
and that's good. That's good. That's a good thing. So no. It's hope on the horizon.
Yeah. I mean, yes. I'm maybe not quite as optimistic as you are, but yes.
So that's our review of that book. I don't have anything else to say about it. I like the characters. I mean, I really still think, despite the fact the characters weren't well developed, they were still vivid characters and they were very distinct from each other. And there were some things about the book that I liked in sense of a foreshadowing. There was an old man who was hinted at possibly being the father of one of the AI, the secret father of one of the AIs. He was the old guy with a scar on his face, and
yeah.
There's a lot of really good things in here. It was just so much potential.
But I will say this in terms of the future of it and everything also, I will say that, what was I going to say? I'm having like a brain. Number one, one of the things that drew me to Viz Media is the fact that they appear to be publishing science fiction. Okay.
Yeah. Well, this was science fiction, I think.
It's definitely science fiction. I think the use of AIs, even though it's built out into a distant future, I think the question of what happened to all the humans, it's nagging at me. It's just eating at me, dude.
I know. I want to know. I just can't. I can't bring myself to finish reading the book. It's so. I mean, I might just keep it as like a discipline piece. Just keep it in my book bag for every once in a while when I feel like, okay, you can force yourself through and just force myself to finish the book, because I really do want to know what happened, but I just the moment to moment prose was just so bad. It felt like I was being punched in the face with words. That wasn't exactly what I said to you.
He was nerding out. He was nerding out over his own concepts, and he didn't have anyone there to rein him in.
Right. Yes. It was very much a huge like a nerd rant when they start talking about how cool their last, hey, the last time I played Pathfinder, my character rolled a 20 and I killed a dragon and better. It was just, there was so much like nerd enthusiasm yes. in the story that a lot of the other things, which weirdly, he showed competence in the character development that he showed competence in those, but then didn't do it.
Yes.
Didn't follow through with it. So well, I have faith in the author. I don't have faith in the people that like the, I don't have faith in the editors or the agent or the publisher that stood between the author and this book being put into paper. That's my problem with it.
Oddly, I'm going to look out for this guy.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
I'm going to see what else he does. See how he develops, you know, a guy, John Ringo, who used to write for Bane books. He wrote a series called the Posleen series, and his first book was competently written, but man, there were some things that were like clearly like, dude, you need some more editing.
Yeah, yeah.
I mentioned this series before, but by his third book, I was in love with the whole series.
Because he'd learned. He had learned.
Yes. So I will come back and check on this guy. I'll buy another book. And also Viz Media, they're by and large are doing a good job. So
I think so too. I agree with you there. The fact that they're doing actual sci-fi is important. So I feel kind of guilty about trashing this book on that account too.
Yes.
But yeah.
Says as a writer, you still have art. And you know the one final point, which is the Chinese. There's an article that I posted over at the Fresh Pulp group page. The Chinese are using science fiction actively as a social motivator to get people to envision society, which is what we used to do in the West.
Yes.
But now it's become
this. Huh? We didn't do it wasn't like a program in the West, but we were doing it anyway.
But we used it as this impetus and this catalyst for innovation. Everything that we have today in modern society was first dreamt of by some science fiction writer. And even though science fiction itself was marginalized, now that it's become more mainstream, it's become less about the science.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I wrote this recently on the page saying, now what we have is we have stories without purpose. The whole purpose of the story is about identity or the exposition of some other thing that's got nothing to do with the science. And those things are not mutually exclusive.
And it may be, and this is going to be something that perhaps we should dive into a lot more in future podcasts, but it may be that genuine sci-fi cannot be mainstream, that there's only a limited number of people who can really, really get this. And once you mainstream it, it is going to have to be watered down. I would say that about any genre. I'm not putting sci-fi in an elite place. I think that, you know, anytime, well, you see the mainstreaming of romance and you see this in things like Outlander. Well, you have to put a fantasy element in it to get everybody involved.
Right. Right.
And I'm sure there are a lot of romance fans out there who are like, yeah, you don't have to do this crazy. You don't have to have time travel to have a good romance story. And I think that the impetus to mainstream all the genres tends to dumb it down and to dilute each of the genres' purposes.
And well, a fair amount of our readers and watchers, oddly enough, are in Iran. Something like 40 or 50 of them. And one of the most consistent comments I get about American science fiction is, "What the hell are you guys doing?"
Yeah. I mean, I have to agree with them on that. What are we doing? What are we doing with
science? You know? Like, that's not science fiction. Why did she win for science? Like, that's not even science fiction, dude. And I was like, I can't even comment on it. I can't even comment it without being blackballed over here. Anyway,
right.
So we've come to the end of our time. We're about 3 minutes over on this episode. So we're going to take a brief pause, which we will then use to insert the credits for the next episode, and then we'll start right. again.
Yeah.